Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome again to another edition of Liberty Unbridled. The music turned itself up again, which is always my favorite. You are listening to Liberty Unbridled on the My View Matters radio network. I am your host, Ken Molman. And we've just got a handful of things to do tonight. Not a big rush schedule, I don't think, tonight. But if you'd like to call in, the number here is area code 858-683-1326. And I just realized that I did not start the chat room up, so I'll fire that up right now. If you're listening live, there is the chat room there where you can engage with other listeners. I usually check it during the bottom of the hour break, but don't check it through the rest of the show because Maya's distracting. Anyway, again, if you want to call in tonight, the number here, 858-683-1326. So I guess to start off tonight, like we do every night or every show, we'll start with the random political rhetoric generator. Tonight's randomly generated political rhetoric is, I will not stand for an America where filthy hobos and socialists can undermine our right to borrow money from Asia. Political generator is entertaining at times. I see we have a call in the queue here, but I don't know if they want to talk. Blog Talk's acting terrible tonight, folks, and I apologize. So I'm going to let that sit for a minute, and we'll see if it decides anybody wants to talk. But anyway, getting right to it here. There was an article that came out here in the past week or so, a little over a week ago now. There was a big story about how Congress has been the most ineffective Congress in history because they only passed 52 laws this year. And I don't know that that's necessarily a bad thing. And we've had that conversation here, I believe. I know I've talked to lots of people about my personal viewpoints on gridlock, and that gridlock, for the sake of gridlock, is not a good thing. Gridlock, for the sake of gridlock, if it's a partisan thing, is bad, right? Because that means people are just naysaying things simply because somebody else said it, not because of the merits of the issue itself. But gridlock caused because of a true philosophical difference, because of a true concern that this may not be a good idea, is a good thing. Ideally, gridlock should be about, hey, is this plan going to help or hurt people? Is this plan constitutional? Is this plan the right thing to do? Lots of questions should be asked about any law that gets passed, and unfortunately, most laws don't have those questions asked, and they just kind of ramrod the stuff through and, you know, whatever, the results be damned. And so I don't mind at all a little bit of gridlock. I don't mind it at all when it's, you know, when it's for true good reasons, you know, a true disagreement over the policy, whether it be philosophical or more pragmatic, that doesn't really matter. You know, as long as it's a legitimate debate about the merits of a particular law, I think that's a good thing that there's gridlock. Gridlock means that there's concerns. And, you know, they just recently used the nuclear option in the U.S. Senate. Now, it's currently only limited to judges, appointments for judges. But you've kind of set the precedent here, guys, in the Senate, that you're basically killing the filibuster. And that's where that leads. Because inevitably what will happen is sometime in the future, the Republicans will get frustrated with the Democrats filibustering, and they'll do the same thing. They'll say, you know what, for the good of the country, blah, 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 we're going around the filibuster rules for this other thing that's not, you know, beyond what was done before. And then when people scream and yell, they'll say, hey, you know, you Democrats did this when Obama was president and nothing was getting done. And, you know, in the end, it basically takes the Democrats' ability to yell and scream about it away. But then once that precedent's set, then the Democrats, the next time around that they're in control and the Republicans are blocking their stuff, same thing, right? Back and forth, till we just basically don't have a filibuster anymore. And I think that's unfortunate. I think the filibuster is an important thing. The idea is that just one senator can hold things up unless there is a supermajority of senators that agree to move on. And that's actually something that protects rights. That's a good thing in general. We don't want a rapidly changing government. A rapidly changing government would make it very difficult for the everyday citizen to even know what the law even is. And as it sits, we have so many laws on the books. There was a guy who wrote a book, I think it's called Three Felonies a Day, where because there are so many laws on the books that everyday average Americans on accident commit three felonies every day with no malice, no intent, not even thinking they're breaking the law. They're doing it on accident because there's so many laws. I guess what I'd like to see, what I'd really like to see is a review of all the existing laws. I'd like to see laws that expire automatically after 5 years, 10 years, 15 years, 20 years, whatever they are. I'd really like to see laws that expire because I do believe that a lot of laws get passed that in the end are not beneficial for folks. In the end, they may solve a temporary problem, or at least purport to, but end up being on the books forever. Forever. You know, a good example of this probably is the EPA. You know, at a time where water pollution and air pollution were really getting bad in our major metropolitan areas, and for whatever reason, the other means weren't allowed to work as far as civil litigation and whatnot, the EPA was created to start putting down regulations to help clean up the water and the air. And for all intents and purposes, things are a lot cleaner than they used to be. So much so that the EPA is now going overboard, way beyond what anyone who created it, or I should say, way beyond the intent of those who created it, in the 70s, they're going after things that have been around for hundreds of years. They're going after things that, do they pollute? Yeah, but it's not pollution like what they were created to clean up. It's not the smog and the heavy metals and the water and the, it's not that type of pollution. And it's not that I'm for polluting anyway, but I without getting into the big long thing on the EPA, the point is that if the people in the 70s, if the situation now with pollution had existed in the 70s, the EPA would never have been created. But now they exist infinitely, and there is no way to get rid of them because now it's a matter of, well, we need to repeal a law rather than just letting it expire. And then you have the alarmists who come out and say, oh, my gosh, repealing this law, well, you're going to go back to lead in the water and smog. We're not. We're not. And even if we did, then Congress could take action again. Not, again, from a philosophical standpoint, I think there's a better direction to go, but just from a greater view here. And to the point of, I really think laws should expire. All laws should expire. The laws trimmed down and made simple. It'll help make the laws more understandable and less complex for the average person. There are lots of laws on the books here in even Kentucky that really don't make a lot of sense that they're still on the books. They're problems we don't have anymore. They're still out there. There's lots of weirdo laws out there. You know, I've been looking through election laws because of all the stuff I do with the Libertarian Party. I've been looking through the election laws again. You know, in Kentucky law, there are statutes on how to nominate convention. And they do not apply to political groups like the Libertarian Party or the Constitution Party or the Green Party. They apply to those who are entitled to a state-sponsored primary but choose to nominate by convention. But, and understand Kentucky's a three-tier system, so the bottom tier, which is where everybody is except for Democrats and Republicans, they don't get to use a primary or a convention. They're basically free to do whatever they want. The law does not regulate their behavior at all. The law on the conventions is supposed to regulate the next two tiers, but there's also another law that says that Republicans and Democrats must use the taxpayer-funded primary, which, by the way, if they ever challenged it, they could get rid of. But the point is that the law says they must. So all that's left is nominations by convention, and it's sitting out there completely unused, and to my knowledge, hasn't been used in quite some time. Trying to think, the last time it may have been used may have been 1999, maybe. And that was when Gatewood Galbraith ran for governor under the Reform Party ticket. And Reform Party at that time was a middle-tier party. Other than that, I think you've got to go back to the 80s or the 70s to find somebody who that would even apply to. And so the law sits out there doing absolutely nothing, just hanging out. And we've got a lot of those laws out there just hanging out. But there's no political pressure to go back and clean all that garbage up. There's a lot of garbage in Kentucky law. A lot. You know, we had the big tax issues that were out there. And we had a forum in Northern Kentucky, and one of the people on the panel, who was basically the neutral party on the panel, was a gentleman who was retired from the Department of Local Government. And he pointed out that basically what's happened is over time, the laws change, the legislators come and go, and nobody really remembers how or why these taxing districts were even created. And in fact, he pointed out that when it comes to taxing districts, there are these extension offices, the University of Kentucky Extension offices. He said he defied anyone to find in Kentucky law the ability for the extension offices to exist, much less have the power to tax. Because somewhere along the way, their ability got wiped out, but they never got wiped out. And we have all these weird broken laws out there. The petitioning requirements, one that I'm also very familiar with, are different for all these different things, which is extraordinarily confusing. Hey, if you're going to put something on the ballot, it should be the same percentage of signatures no matter what. It should be the same procedure no matter what, because you're putting an issue on the ballot. That should be just be the procedure to put things on the ballot. But instead, there's probably 10 different procedures for the very limited number of things we can even put on the ballot as citizens. And so I guess my point is that just because you enacted fewer laws doesn't mean you were unsuccessful. Could be that it was really the 52 laws that were the most important to the country. It could be that the other laws that were proposed were absolutely stupid. I mean, make no mistake, the Republicans kept proposing law after law after law after law and passing them through the House and sending them to the Senate to repeal Obamacare. And, of course, they never saw the light of day or even reached the Senate floor in the Senate. And, you know, make no mistake, I don't think the Republicans ever expected them to. I think those were all just things that now people can go out back to their home districts and say, I sponsored legislation to end Obamacare. It was never a real sincere effort to do so. You know, a real sincere effort to do so would have been to cut its funding off. That would have been a sincere effort. But few laws are passed doesn't mean it was unsuccessful. If anything, we ought to be going back and trying to repeal all these laws that don't matter anymore. We should be trying to simplify the law and simplify things like the tax code, which are now just phenomenally, I mean, combined with Obamacare, I don't even know how long the tax code is anymore. I believe it was 21 or 22,000 pages long before Obamacare got dropped in. So do we really need 21,000 pages of tax code? No, we don't. Of course not. Oh, yeah, somebody out there is going to lose their little exemption. Well, boo-hoo. Good for the goose. It's good for the gander. Make laws simple. Make them broadly applied. And that's what we should be talking about, not, oh, well, Congress only enacted 52 laws. We should be talking about, hey, Congress didn't repeal enough stuff. Congress didn't fix enough stuff. Congress didn't simplify enough stuff. We need to be moving things towards a more equitable situation. The law applies equally to everyone. No carved out exemptions, exceptions, any of that stuff. And we need to be repealing laws that don't ever get prosecuted anyway. That was the big deal in that Virginia governor's race. The GOP candidate was in big supporter of replacing or restoring the anti-sodomy laws. Well, the anti-sodomy laws are based on, you know, 200 or 100-year-old laws that, for the most part, most of society just doesn't care anymore. And, yeah, prosecutors use them to pile on in rape cases, but, hey, you know what? Rape is rape is rape is rape. And you ought to just, you know, go ahead and make rape worse than add on these other silly charges that don't mean anything. There's no reason for laws to be subjectively applied. So we should applaud Congress, assuming that the 52 laws that they passed were good laws, which I don't know if they were or not. I'm guessing that they probably weren't. There were laws that I wanted to see passed, like the one proposed to roll back the NSA, that didn't pass. I wish it had. I've just put up the next story I want to bring up, and this is a perfect example of a government agency that's gone way beyond its original mandate, the FDA. The FDA was created under the Food and Cosmetics Act a really long time ago. I don't even remember all the details on it anymore, but it's been a very long time. There was something else before it was called the FDA, but the FDA is basically the modern incarnation of what came out of the Food and Cosmetics Act. Anyway, so the FDA has now decided that you are not allowed to send your DNA off to have it examined by a private company and have them send it back to you. This company, which was called 23andMe, is a company that you could send in a cheek swab or whatever, and they would do tests to see if you had genetic precursors for hereditary diseases, if you had all kinds of different various things. And a number of these things exist too. You know, and this one did it too, where your ancestors came from, right? What region of the world do your ancestors hail from? Because they have maps of DNA of where things moved. It was a migratory thing, so they know. And until, you know, about a week or so ago, you could pay $99 and get all this. And now the FDA has decided that that's a medical device and that you're not allowed to do that anymore. And, you know, I don't understand. FDA, when it was created back in, I want to say it was the 1910s, it might have been the 1920s, maybe even the 1930s, but for some reason I'm thinking it was the 1910s. When the FDA, the enabling legislation for the FDA was passed, certainly, preventing people from finding out their own ethnic origins and possible hereditary diseases was not at all within the scope of what the FDA or the Food and Cosmetic Act was in any way, shape, or form thought of. That was all about, hey, people are selling poison to people, and, you know, we need to stop people, you know, the old snake oil salesman stuff. And we need to make sure that food is safe. That was the concept behind the enabling legislation. that created the FDA. But now somehow the FDA now has the ability to be able to tell a private company and a private individual that they are not allowed to engage in commerce, that a company with the means to tell you what you want to know, and you as an individual with $99 and a willingness to find out, you two are not allowed, you as an individual are not allowed to find out. Why? I mean, it's just punitive more than anything. It's really, really silly. Who cares? Just amazing. All right. Well, before the break here, I wanted to just bring up something else silly, and I meant to bring this up at the top of the show, and my tabs in my browser got a little shuffled here. Couple quick things. Number one, everybody saw the Black Friday madness, the tasers, the people firing shots. I mean, just, you know, the typical craziness of Black Friday, and it actually seemed a bit more tame than usual. But there was video of the lady with the taser, and that was interesting. But one of the things that came out along that same time is, you think Black Friday was bad. In Germany, the PS4 was launched, and people standing outside in line, I mean, it looked right out of a Black Friday, you know, from 3, 4, 5 years ago outside of a Walmart. And this is, you know, basically a Walmart-ish looking store based on the videos that I've seen. But it's amazing, just hordes of people rushing in and grabbing stuff. Thankfully, no fights broke out, which was good, but just a horde of people just rushing in to get a PS4. Simply amazing. I don't know. Maybe it's just me. It's not that big of a deal to me. You know, a PlayStation 4 may be awesome, but, well, first of all, I'm not going to wait in the cold for anything. I mean, come on. And secondly, and more importantly, you know, hey, they're going to make more of them. I promise. They'll make more. Anyway, one more thing before we go to break. The Libertarian Party of Kentucky, just because I'm involved with that, as everyone who listens to the show should know by now, I am involved with the Libertarian Party of Kentucky, and because we don't get a lot of media, I like to promote it when we have something that's noteworthy and media-worthy. We just won a important decision with the Kentucky Registry of Election Finance. Essentially, again, getting back to that whole theme of Kentucky law is messed up. Yeah, it's messed up, especially when it comes to elections, and that's why I mentioned that example, because those are the things I've been looking at lately. In campaign finance law, it's not very well defined. There's lots of deficiencies. And so the folks at KREF, Kentucky Registry for Election Finance, KREF, they do their best. And quite honestly, I'll tell you that when I talk to the KREF, State Board of Elections, and even those people at the Secretary of State for the filing office, everybody is very professional. Everybody does their job. And I don't fault them at all for the horrible laws that have been created by our legislators who aren't paying attention or just trying to pass some feel-good legislation. So essentially, there was a question as to whether or not the Libertarian Party would be able to transfer money and be considered – it extends from an issue from 2011 that went into 2012, where eventually they found that the state party, the Libertarian Party of Kentucky, is a political party for the purposes of campaign finance. But after finding that, there was concern from KREF. They basically when talking to their folks the gentleman who's in charge of tracking political parties said that he was unsure if the district and county parties of the Libertarian Party of Kentucky were indeed political parties. And as such, if they were not political parties and the state party was, then money could not be transferred between the state party and its affiliates, the county and district parties. And obviously that couldn't stand. I mean, that was it was a weird place to be, but it's because the law is bad. It's not because of anyone in particular at KREF. The law is bad. So we put in a request for clarification with the Kentucky Registry of Election Finance. And KREF came back and said, indeed, for the purposes of campaign finance, the Libertarian Party of Kentucky is hereby recognized as a major political party on par with the Democrat and Republican parties. And that's a very good win for us. That means it's actually a big deal because political parties can put a butt ton of money into candidates' races. And if we are unable to do that, then it puts our candidates at a significant disadvantage, more so than running as a third party already is. And so that's a big part of what we in the Libertarian Party have been fighting here recently are the administrative things to get on equal footing. And then at the same time, we have to do our job to make sure that the public actually supports and accepts our platforms. But we can't certainly do one without the other. If we're handicapped and are not able to raise and spend money the same way that Democrats and Republicans are able to spend and raise and spend money, we'll never win. So it was a big win. It was a good win. And I'm very happy. I thank everybody who is involved in the party side of this. Our state party treasurer, James, has done a great, great job keeping everything together. And so I send out a special thanks to him, as well as a handful of other folks. Joe in Boone County with our Boone County party was a huge help. And there were a few others, too, that kicked in advice and help in getting this together. And this isn't over. We're going to continue to push to make sure that we are on equal footing when it comes to campaign finance and anywhere else that we can, because, again, we're already at a disadvantage being a third party so-called third party. But to have the law actually specifically discriminate against us as well is even worse. So with that said, folks, we're going to take a quick break here. It's the bottom of the hour. When we come back, we've got a lot. Government gone wild. And why people are very, very upset with the direction of government. You are listening to Liberty Unbridled on the My View Matters Radio Network. Stay tuned, folks. We'll be back here in just a few minutes.
first impressions aren't the most important thing. They're the only thing. At Ernie's Print Shop, we'll produce what you need to represent your company professionally. Right now, you can get 1,000 full-color business cards, 1,000 4x6 postcards, or a 3x5 banner for just $60. You choose. Check us out at erniesprintshop.com. Ernie's Print Shop. Over 50 years, one source, one solution. erniesprintshop.com. 502-969-8585.
Being a victim of crime is no joke, but you do have options that can help you avoid becoming a victim. I'm Ed Springson of the My View Matters radio show, and on behalf of myself and co-host Ed Martin, I urge each of you to help us fight against crime. You can do your part by calling Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE. Since 1982, Crime Stoppers has helped get over 23,000 criminals off the street with your help. Working together, we can make a difference to take our streets back. Please call Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE, or you can visit them online at www.582clue.com. Remember, Crime Stoppers always offers up to a $1,000 reward. Get involved and help make a positive change in your neighborhood. Thanks.
Advertisers, here's a great way to reach a quality audience. Get heard on My View Matters and make some noise in the marketplace.
Email myviewmatters@aol.com for advertising opportunities. Make a sound investment.
All right, folks, we're back. You are listening to Liberty Unbridled on the My View Matters radio network. So getting to the topic of runaway government, bad government, and the backlash. It had a story come out December 5th, which, by the way, caller Don, who often calls the show, is lurking and listening tonight, but wanted me to let you guys know that December 5th was the anniversary of Prohibition being repealed. And so, of course, we all are glad that that occurred, but wanted to make sure that I mentioned that. But on also on December 5th, a story came out about a guy who basically the cops came looking for some folks that had broken parole. And they basically wanted to search his house. And he refused. He told them, you can do that, but only if you get a warrant. And the cops, in return, basically, allegedly anyway, basically said that if they had to come back with a warrant, they were going to come back at a time when all their neighbors would see it. They were going to come with a ram thing and bust the door down, and they were going to shoot his dog. I mean, it's just amazing, you know, that it's the level of intimidation that they were trying to use. It's no wonder that there are a lot of people who do not trust police officers, and that's obviously the wrong way to handle that situation. The right way to handle that situation is to go get a warrant. That's not that big of a deal. And in fact, depending on what's going on and what time of day it is and whatever, I probably could have called one in. But I really don't understand. I don't get it's amazing. People don't understand that when people have a inherent distrust of the police, it is that type of situation exactly that causes that. And so if people don't understand why, that's the reason why. Because you have some jerks out there who abuse their right. I always like to say, in general, police fall into two categories. There's the ones that actually believe in doing public service and helping the public. And then there's the other guys who are there because they got a badge and a gun and can bully people around. And it's those ones that have the badge and the gun and bullying people around that make a bad for the ones. And unfortunately, in my experience, it's the minority of those who are there really to help people. And it's just a shame. Anyway, that's why. Another interesting thing, this has been from a couple weeks back, editorial in the Northern Kentucky Enquirer from a gentleman named Brent Cooper. Brent Cooper is involved with the Chamber of Commerce and the Kentucky State Chamber of Commerce. He also was one who went and testified on behalf of the statewide smoking ban. He's pushing that. And he wrote a story about how Kentucky cannot do better, or Kentucky will flourish, if businesses improve their workforce health. And this is the rationale that they're using behind pushing things for like smoking bans and trying to create government incentives to control people's consumption behaviors as far as being overweight or whatever. And I don't necessarily disagree with the premise that a healthier workforce may entice some businesses to come to an area. However, I have a very serious problem with government laying down regulations and laws requiring people to act in certain ways, ostensibly to make them healthier. Because in that situation, no longer is it a voluntary workforce. Now we're creating some sort of machine. We're tinkering with it, and from a governmental level, forcing people to be the right kind of tool for a business to want to use. And I have a very big problem with and or business trying to control individual behavior. The relationship between employer and employee is simple. The employer decides whether or not to hire an employee and whether or not to fire that employee or to lay them off, whatever. That's the relationship that exists. Government coming in and saying, well, you know, you, Mr. Bar Owner, you can't allow smoking in here anymore because it's bad for your health, doesn't actually help that business owner. It doesn't actually help that employee. You've taken a choice away from that business owner, and you've taken a choice away from that employee. Most of the people that work in smoking establishments, in particular, are smokers themselves and choose to work there on purpose. And so I have a very big problem with this government and business coming together, colluding to create sort of quote-unquote perfect society. Big problem. And it leads to other stupid laws. An article that came out here the past few days about, this is on Reason.com. Reason.com says, stupid laws cause dangerous hospital shortages. And they're talking about this in another state, but we have the same thing in Kentucky, where they have a certificate of need program, where they limit the number of beds per capita. So based on the number of people that are involved, or not involved, but based on the number of people that live in an area, that's how many beds, hospital beds, are allowed to exist in that area. The goal is to limit competition. The idea is that if there's too much competition, then somehow you're going to end up in a cutthroat situation where people are receiving substandard health care. Well, when you limit supply, what happens? When you limit supply and there is demand, then you inherently increase the cost. Of course, especially in the situation where you're creating artificial monopolies. You want to go somewhere else? Oh, good luck. Where I live, here in Northern Kentucky. In Northern Kentucky, basically everything now is St. Elizabeth Healthcare. If I want to go somewhere besides St. Elizabeth, with exception to, I think, Christ Hospital from Cincinnati moved an office in, but there's a big lawsuit over whether or not they were allowed to do that because of the certificate of need thing. But assuming that I didn't want to go to St. Elizabeth, the next hospitals in Kentucky that I can go to are in Maysville, in Mason County, or in Harrison County, or I can go down 75 and go to Lexington, or down 71. I don't know how far Louisville's system comes up, but the point is that it becomes extraordinarily unreasonable if I, for whatever reason, I just don't like the name of the place. Whatever the reason is, I can't go somewhere else because government has created an artificial monopoly. And when you create artificial monopolies, what else happens? We know what happens. Historically, monopolies cause lesser quality products. And in this case, it's a lesser quality service. And the service is healthcare. So we have higher costs and lower service because we're creating artificial monopolies, in theory, to protect the consumer. Well, when that falls apart, then we create all these regulations and more regulations and more regulations, which then create an even higher cost. And then what happens? Everybody screams about the higher cost, and we end up with Obamacare. That's how we got here. That's how we got here. It's frustrating. Speaking of artificially limiting markets, Tesla Motor Company, who I've been following for years and years and years, and I've always been a fan of Tesla Motor Company, they're getting shut out. They're trying to spread now throughout the United States, and they're getting shut out in various states. Texas, I know, was one of them. Now there's something in Ohio where they're trying to pass emergency legislation to prevent an auto manufacturer from doing direct-to-public sales of their automobiles. is a protectionist measure to protect auto dealerships. Yeah, the car salesman. We're protecting car salesmen. Is there a less popular group of people out there other than maybe lawyers than car salesmen? Really? I mean, no offense if you're a car salesman. Hey, man, everybody's got to work. And I've met a couple of car salesmen that were actually honest. They're the exception, not the rule. The point is that you're creating a protectionism that, again, hurts consumers. It drives up costs. Tesla is trying to do a model that cuts out the middleman. Literally cuts out the middleman, which in turn means that the cost is lower to the end consumer than it would otherwise be if there was a middleman who had to make some money on the markup. How is that good for consumers? How is that good for consumers? How is it good to have higher costs and more people mandated to be involved? It doesn't work. It's asinine thinking. When you try to force something on that just creates busy work or creates additional jobs, yes, but jobs that aren't required, you drive up costs. A good example of things that weren't required that kept getting added on and cost, the whole situation here in Detroit. Detroit, Michigan, is in deep trouble. And now they're basically a judge here in the past few days ruled that they can go through bankruptcy. They can go through the bankruptcy process. And there's estimates that those people who have pensions will receive less than 20 cents on the dollar of what the pension was supposed to pay them. And that's horrible, horrible for the people who are on the pension. People who, you know, they had a contract with the state, and it said that you work here for 20, 25, 30, whatever it is, years, and we'll pay you X percentage of your salary for the rest of your life. That was the deal. The problem was the deal was unreasonable. It was unsustainable. Oh, sure, here in Kentucky, you know, there were legislators that stole money out of the pension systems and weren't funding them properly. Oh, yeah, I know. I agree. But the question is, where are you going to take that money from now to make up for that money that was taken out? You're going to take it out in tax dollars? Man, taxpayers don't have a whole lot more to give. Are you going to take it out of roads or other, you know, actual legitimate forms of what government is doing? If there is a legitimate function, it's public service, and roads is one of those. But are you going to take it from that? Are you going to take it from the pay of the legislators? I'd love to see that, but there's no way in hell they're going to vote for that. The legislators aren't going to cut their own pay. So where's the money going to come from? The answer, it's going to come from you, the retirees. That's where it's going to come from. That's what's happening in Michigan right now. That's what's happening in Detroit. And so anybody who's on a public pension, I ask you, to please, if you're in the public sector right now, be sure you're piling some of that money elsewhere. Don't just be expecting the pension to be there. It's not going to be there. It's unsustainable. I'm sorry. And I feel bad for you. I do. Most of the people who are in the public pension, most of those people are not people abusing the system. But there are plenty of people who are. There are plenty of people abusing the system. If I had my way, I'd change the formula on the whole thing. No more of this top 3 year, top 5 year stuff, because that's too easy to abuse. You make it some sort of average across all 30 years or whatever of your employment and a percentage of that, whatever. And you make it so it's only your pension, or not your pension, but only based on your pay, not based on expenses or perks or anything like that. And I think that might be sustainable. It probably would have been sustainable if they made those changes in the 80s. But now we're in a position where it's not sustainable. It's just not. And so, of course, pensioners are getting a little worried out there, understandably so. Meanwhile, big story about how Obama is spending $600 million out of the transportation fund on rail. Now, I have nothing in particular against rail per se, other than the fact that it's an old technology. It's a technology that is limited use or limited usefulness at this point. But where it makes sense, I have no particular problem with it. I spoke about Tesla before. The CEO at Tesla, I can't remember his name. It's a real funny name, Elon something or other or something like that, has a design for a vacuum-sealed high-speed train, and I think that's brilliant. You know, I think that that's something – I mean, his design had it running at almost 700 miles an hour, which at that speed, suddenly – having a cross-country rail commuter line that runs that speed cross-country would make sense. I could see that. The problem is they put it in things that don't make sense. You know, there are Amtrak lines out there that lose money every single year. Every single year. Why do we subsidize them? Why not force them to reorganize how they're doing things, to do things smarter? Change the corridors to make it so that, well, maybe people have to drive a little further. Maybe it's fewer stops. I don't know what's driving the thing into bankruptcy or why they lose money every year, but they have to do something. They have to do something. Another story came out about college and pro football and how the taxpayers are helping to pay, subsidize, football. Now, I have no particular problem with football. I enjoy a good football game. Bengals won today. I enjoy a good football game, but I do have a big problem with forcing taxpayers to subsidize it. Because in the end, why should anyone but the consumers of the product be forced to pay for the product? It's the same concept as Obamacare and people being forced to buy stuff they don't want to buy. Now, the situation here, I would actually buy football, right? Or I'd pay my share. Now, I wouldn't buy a ticket. Good Lord, it's expensive and it's loud and people get drunk and stupid. And honestly, I've been to a couple games and neither time did I enjoy myself in person. But I really did enjoy, I do enjoy watching a game on TV. And I have a big problem with taxpayers being forced to pay for sports or for anything, no matter what. Why are people being compelled to buy stuff they don't necessarily want? And that's another reason why people are unhappy. And all this culminates, just, there's so many of these different reasons why people are happy, and those are just a few examples. People are upset, and understandably so. And where are we at now? 66% on average, according to Real Clear Politics, most recent average, 66% of Americans believe that America's on the wrong track. Only 25% believe we're on the right track. Now, that's down off of the peak of from October, when 75% of Americans said we were on the wrong track, and 18%, or 17.5% rather, said we were on the right track. An overwhelming majority of Americans don't believe we're on the right track. But again, there's all these weird things about this. So Democrats, and especially Obama, have been trying for years to make it about rich versus poor, the 1%. Remember the 99% and the Occupy Wall Street stuff that a lot of that was asked for. If there were good people involved with it, don't get me wrong, I'm not trying to say everyone involved with it was bad, but, you know, it was very heavily astroturfed. And I think that's why it didn't really last that long. But in general, only 47% of Americans believe that the gap between the rich and the poor is a very big problem. Meanwhile, the income ratio between the top 20% and the bottom 20% is higher here than in any advanced, quote-unquote advanced, we used to call those first world nations. The point is that it's very interesting to see that people don't think that's the problem. What is also interesting is that a recent study came out again on December 5th that show Americans are sick and tired of war. We're sick of it. 52% of Americans, the highest since they started polling this in 1964, 52% of Americans believe that the U.S. should mind its own business internationally. The previous peak was in 1978 at 43%. We're now at 52% of Americans believe that we should not be dorking around in everybody else's country around the world. We should be focusing on the problems here at home. But we're not doing that. And that's another reason why people are upset. People are so upset, it's interesting. Some of the new numbers that are out, a Harvard poll showed that 52% of the youngest millennials would vote to recall Obama from office. If they could, because can't. But that's a very interesting stat. In fact, in general, millennials are now figuring out Obamacare is not going to work for them, and that's a big deal. And it doesn't matter if you call it the Affordable Care Act or Obamacare, which is what everybody was saying originally. Well, if you don't call it Obamacare, it changes the results. Not really, not significantly, by like 1%, whoopity-doo-dah. Doesn't change anything. 57% millennials, 18-29-year-olds, disapprove. 57% of them disapprove of Obamacare, 56% disapprove of the Affordable Care Act. 40% believe things will get worse under Obamacare. 44% think they'll get worse under the Affordable Care Act as far as quality of health care. And the amount of money that they'll have to pay, do they think it would increase, decrease, or stay the same? 51% believe under Obamacare it'll increase. 50% under Affordable Care Act believe it will increase. People aren't being fooled by these names. Millennials are now dropped back down to where everybody else was as far as percentage of approval rating for Obama. Party identification is significantly lower in 4 years. From November of 2009, when 43% of millennials were identified as Democrats and 23% identified as Republicans, we're now down to 31% identify as Democrats. That's a drop of 12%, and 25%, an increase of 2%, identify as Republicans. Between 25 and 29-year-olds, a similar trend. Democrats are staying about the same. They went from 35 to 38, an increase of 3%, but Republicans took a hit. They went down from 30% down to 22%, or a loss of 8. Approval ratings in Congress are way down. Everybody's upset. The millennials are upset. And, of course, Obamacare just continues to get worse and worse and worse and worse. And it never gets better because it can't get better. It's a mess. 78% of the uninsured have no plans to participate in Obamacare. So almost 80% of the people we're supposed to help by forcing us to buy more expensive insurance are not going to be helped anyway. And a bunch of people are going to lose their insurance here in Kentucky. 280,000 are going to lose their insurance as a result of Obamacare, and they're going to have to go out and get different insurance. Again, it's no surprise people are upset. When you have all these factors, people are upset, and they should be. You know, it gets back to the Virginia governor's race, and we're going to end on this. The Virginia governor's race, there were three candidates in the race, and the Republican machine and a lot of voices in the Republican Party blamed the presence of a Libertarian on the ballot for the loss of the Republican candidate. But the Republican candidate himself does not blame it on that. He blames it on the lack of money. But the Libertarian candidate in that race did garner 6.6% of the vote, which was significantly higher than Libertarians had garnered in the past. In the past, Libertarian candidates had never gotten above 1%. So there's a shift going on. People are waking up, and they are sick and tired of Republicans and Democrats and the same old BS that try to feed us. They try to force feed us. People are angry because things are still bad and they keep getting worse. That's the thing that a lot of people, why the anger persists, is that by the time we think we're settled with where we're at, things continue to get worse. Food prices continue to go up. Everything's more expensive. Yeah, gas is down a little bit right now, but food prices certainly are. The point is that we are now at a time where we have an opportunity to make real positive change. We have that opportunity right now. People are angry. They're willing to listen to alternatives. The question is, will enough people have the guts to actually follow those alternatives? Now, for us in the alternative side of things, it is our challenge to explain to people how we're not making a radical change, that these are going to be good changes that'll move things in the right direction, but won't radically alter the world overnight. Because if you try to radically alter the world overnight, people will reject it. And that's in a lot of ways what the Libertarian candidate in Virginia was doing. He was successful in explaining that he wasn't just going to come in and slash taxes, that he wanted to go in first, look at all the spending, and reduce spending first, and then come back and look at taxes. That's common sense. That's what people want to hear. And despite getting outspent a ridiculous amount, the Libertarian candidate, because he spoke common sense, pulled almost 7% of the vote, being massively outspent. That's the point, folks. We have the opportunity right now to make things better. But it's going to take legwork because we aren't going to have the money. You folks in the Tea Party, the establishment's coming for you. You're going to have to overcome that with legwork because the establishment's the group that has the money. Because they're the ones who have set up all the laws to protect all their money and make sure you can't get the benefits their establishment friends do. It's time for us to take control of our government peacefully, right? I'm not talking about armed conflict, but peacefully. Take control back of our government through elections. It's going to take hard work to do it. We can. Folks, that's the end of the show. I appreciate y'all tuning in. Tune in again next week and listen to the other shows on the network. This has been Liberty Unbridled on the My View Matters Radio Network. Y'all have a good week. Take care.